I have been here for almost a little over a month, but for some reason today just seemed especially spectacular. And one reason might have been is that I moved from one of the lodges to the chalet, and last night was my first night there, and I woke up this morning with the sun coming in a rather small window. Sun was pouring in, and I looked out, and Copper Mountain was just framed right there. So it was really, you know, it's kind of more you say, yeah, I do want to get up today. So it made me think about a poem that I wanted to share with you all. And I'm going to read it, and then I also want to suggest to you all that during the class, if you, today or the next 4 days, if you all have any poems or songs or stories or whatever that have inspired you, that are important to you, that are meaningful to you, it's a time where we can share those things. I'd like to invite you all to bring those in if you want to. So this poem is by Mary Oliver. And it's called The Sun. Have you ever seen anything in your life more wonderful than the way the sun, every evening, relaxed and easy, floats towards the horizon and into the clouds of the hills, or the rumpled sea and is gone, and how it slides again out of the blackness every morning on the other side of the world like a red flower streaming upward on its heavenly oils? Say on a morning in early summer, at its perfect imperial distance, and have you ever felt anything, such wild love? Do you think there is anywhere in any language a word billowing enough for the pleasure that fills you as the sun reaches out and it warms you? As you stand there empty-handed, or have you too turned from this world? Or have you too gone crazy for power, for things? And I'm going to read it again because I think poetry, it's important to hear it more than once to really get it. But one of the things that strikes me is that being at Holden is that I'm reminded to be with what is important to me. And one of the things that's really important to me is nature. And that I forget about some of the other things that take over my life. Thoughts about power, about money, about insurance, about the other things in our lives, and that I'm reminded to really connect with what's important to me, and I think that also helps me be connected with my creative spirit. So I will read it again. It's called The Sun. Have you ever seen anything in your life more wonderful than the way the sun, every evening, relaxed and easy, floats towards the horizon and into the clouds or the hills or the rumpled sea and is gone, and how it slides again out of the blackness every morning on the other side of the world like a red flower streaming upward on its heavenly oils? Say on a morning in early summer, at its perfect imperial distance, and have you ever felt for anything, such wild love? Do you think there is anywhere in any language a word billowing enough for the pleasure that fills you as the sun reaches out, as it warms you, as you stand there empty-handed? Or have you too turned from this world? Or have you too gone crazy for power? For things. So that's from Mary Oliver. I wanted to just review what we talked about last night about what the class was going to be about, and then I'd like to hear from you all what some of your expectations or your desires and thoughts are. What I'm hoping to do is for us to explore the creative process, to look at how we are all creators. In the Western world, I'm going to make an assumption from what you all spoke last night, but most of us are Christian in the room. And being Christian, we have a creator God. Our God is a creator, which is different from other religions in the world. Not all religions in the world have a God who is a creator. But we in the West and in the Christian, Judeo-Christian tradition certainly have a creator God. And if we think of ourselves as part of the God and as an image of God, then we too are creators. And I want to look at how do we experience ourselves as creators? And then what is it in your daily life that helps you free your creative spirit? And we'll talk more about our creative spirit and what that is. But what is it that helps free up our creative spirits? And then we're going to have an opportunity to participate in the creative process. And I'll give you an idea of what that's going to be. I have an idea, but I really want you all to join with me in creating it. But my thought is that we will make ceramic tiles. And each of you will have a chance to work on a tile yourself and do with it what you want. And then we're going to put those tiles together and make a table that will be the Elder Hostel 95 Creativity and Spirituality table that will stay here. It'll probably go up into one of the teaching chalets. But I'll make the table. I'll make the wooden structure part. You all will work on the tiles. We'll put the tiles into the table, probably put a glass top over it, and leave it here. So, yeah, you'll leave your stamp for sure. And you'll be able to put your name on it if you'd like, or we'll talk about what you put on your tile. You can leave your tile blank if that's what you would like. So I don't want anybody to get too excited or too worried about having to be artistic here. It's more about expressing yourself. The other thought I had is I might make two tiles for each of you. So you could do one tile that's for the table, do the same thing on the other tile, and take that tile home if you would like a piece of it to take home. And we can talk about that if you'd like to be able to take part of it with you. So we could make the table and then cut it up into 23 pieces, and you could take that. But I thought it would be a little more functional if we left it here. So in order to do that, and I know yesterday I kept saying we only had 4 days. We do have five, but that still pushes us on the ceramic. And I'm doing a test tile right now just to make sure it can get dry enough to put it in the kiln. And my plan is for us to make the tiles on Wednesday. They'll dry all day Wednesday and Wednesday night, Thursday, outside. And what I've been doing is turning the tiles every four hours to get them as dried out as possible in the sun. Hopefully our weather will hold. And then they'll go into the kiln on Thursday night or Thursday afternoon. And by Friday they'll be out and the table will be ready. I won't be able to, we'll be able to assemble it. I won't have done the grout and everything. But that's the idea for that. And I'll talk more about what each tile will be or what you all might do with each tile. But, so does that sound okay? Good. And then I want to do, what I also want to do as we do all of these other things is these are sort of the strands, the kind of, if you were weaving, these are the three strands I see coming in and out and going together during the class. But is to also then to explore the relationship between creativity and spirituality. And we'll talk more about that. In some of the work I do, it's not as easy for me to even use the word spirituality. It's not an acceptable word to use in some cultures, in some corporate cultures that I work in. I can't talk about spirituality, but I can easily talk about creativity. So sometimes I use those words interchangeably, although they're not entirely the same thing. And we're going to talk about the relationship between the two. Some of the questions that come up for me with that is, what does it mean to practice the art of living? If we think about living as an art, and maybe even think about each one of your days as a piece of art. You've created it. You're creating today. And my belief is you, along with the creative spirit, create each day. So you, along with God, create each day. So each day is framed. It's a 24-hour period, and it's a piece of art. So what does it mean to practice the art of creative living? And what does it mean to practice your spiritual path through creativity? So how can you use creativity to be more a part of whatever your spiritual path is? Some of these are fairly personal questions, and I don't expect a lot of feedback or you necessarily to feel like you need to discuss them or talk them with others, but more questions that you might think about for yourself. So in addition to that, or how we can integrate other things, I'd just like to ask you all what your thoughts are, your expectations, your desires, things that you'd like to have us think about, cover.
One of the things that I've been aware of as I've worked in churches is how difficult conflict is for people. Mm. And certainly in our world, we get very, I think, narrow in our understanding of how to resolve conflict. And I think if there's ever a time in the world's history for us to understand how creativity and spirituality can help us with conflict, we are in that, yep. that place and time. Mm-hmm.
Yep, and certainly comes up a lot in the work that I do, because I do diversity work, so I'm working with people who come from different cultural backgrounds that have different ways of experiencing the world, whether it's from the Navajo reservation as opposed to an Anglo background, who have different values, different behaviors, and you're trying to bring those people together to communicate, and there's certainly often conflict there.
Yeah. I think it was apropos of your last statement there, I think it would be Scripture from James, which we're all acquainted with, faith without works is dead. Mm-hmm. If you think of faith in the spiritual aspect and creativity perhaps equating with works, if we're sitting around being spiritual or having our faith but not doing anything, not creating, if you will, works, I don't know how close I can equate those words, but that certainly hit me.
Yeah. I think that's exactly where I'm not talking. Pardon?
In my Christian walk.
Yeah. I appreciate your saying that, because I think what I'm really trying to do here is not to separate creativity as something that we do separately from our lives. It is our work, and it's how we go through our work that we can be creative. I think we have a real strong notion in this culture that if you're creative, you're an artist. And that's somebody over here, you know, that's labeled as something. And musicians can sometimes be put in that category, but often it's the visual artist or the poet or the writer who is considered the creative one. And I don't believe that at all. I think we are all creative. Whatever we do in our interactions every day, we are using creativity, and the creative spirit flows through us. And that's what I'm talking about releasing, is allowing ourselves to know that more fully in our lives. It may take a specific form. I heard someone here talk about a certain hobby they have. Or I like to do ceramics. I like to do woodworking. That takes a certain form. But gardening and being a good cook and working as a doctor, any of the occupations that you all have been involved in.
I think that conflict is a good word to use along with creativity, because opposing forces often cause us to be more creative than we would be if everything was just going on dull. Dull. And it just the use of our hand. If we didn't have the opposing force of our thumb, we couldn't do much with our hand. Not as much. Mm-hmm. We have to get opposition from the other hand, I guess. But just that very basic tool that we have from birth, as opposing forces, or even hashing. So why are we so afraid of conflict in our home, in our church? We don't have anything to talk about if we didn't disagree. We don't. We're not even American.
The answer to that is yes, sir.
I agree with you 100% in that conflict, I think, is a real source of creativity. And we somehow back away from it, and we try to find our way around it and avoid it and do everything we can. But in fact, it can be a real catalyst for creativity. And it kind of in response to you, I think that is offers some of the solutions to the problems that we do have right now.
So. I think most of the people that are our age were brought up that anger was, at least I was, that anger was not appropriate, or, you know, keeping your feelings inside. It was,
or even expressing an opposing view.
Right, yeah, right. And we didn't know how. And that's one reason why we
there are different kinds of conflict.
Right. Sure.
Well, I think oftentimes conflict can become very destructive, and that's been, you know, why we've had such a negative thinking. But that's not using it creatively.
Right.
So that's when we don't use it. Right. From the source for our creativity, it becomes a source for our destruction.
You talk about your paintings. Well, your use of light and shadow makes all the difference in the world in a painting. Mm-hmm. And they're opposing forces. Mm-hmm.
Contrast, yeah.
I think release from fear, which is everywhere all the time, mm-hmm. baseless, meaningless fear, allows creativity to come forth. Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, fear is the biggest block to our creativity. And I think that if we can move into a mode of being creative, we can release our fear. Mm-hmm. Those two things go together that way. And we're going to do a little bit of work on that, because we all have fears about our own creativity and our fears about ourselves as being creative. I mean, I certainly do. And I think it's almost a daily ritual for me to let go of some of those fears and to feel comfortable with myself as being creative. So we're going to actually probably get into that a little bit tomorrow on releasing some of those.
Painting screen at a Norwegian artist, what's his name?
That was stolen not long ago.
Mm. Oh, the scream, yeah.
There's fear of terror. It's one of the greatest pains.
Mm-hmm.
He expressed that fear that we often
have. I'm having trouble understanding what conflict is. To me, black and white are on the same, or just opposing ends of the same scale, and mm-hmm. they're not in conflict with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you talked about the English and the French in Canada, then I could see conflict to mm-hmm. me. But I don't understand what the definition of conflict is. Because you consider the colors as conflict. I mean, the shades as conflict, and I don't. I just consider them part of the same scale, and so I'm a little. But if you talk about the French and the English and in Quebec and mm-hmm. Ontario, then you're, I can understand the conflict.
I think one way to look at it is that they're all on continuums. Even the French and the English, is you can look at it as being a part of a continuum. It's more how do they come together, whether it becomes a conflict or whether, I think what you were saying was that black and white are opposing on a scale when you're talking in the art world. They oppose each other as far as colors, and through that opposition,
but they're on the same scale though.
Right.
They're part
of a continuum. Right.
But aren't we so talking about contrast? Aren't we talking about two things, contrast
mm-hmm.
and conflict?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's contrast as opposed to conflict, I guess.
Well, there's some ways you can use the word conflict. They conflict with each other. But in the human scale, you're talking about, and we're talking more in the artistic scale, using that sort of as a metaphor to talk about in human systems. So I think contrast might be a more appropriate word, although the two words, the far end of white and black are often used to say that they conflict with each other. When you bring them together, different things can happen. And it depends on how you, as the artist, works with them to see if they work well together.
But you blend them though, so that there's at the final result there's no conflict.
Right.
I mean, it is.
Or be gray.
Potentially.
Well, but gray may be black against white, or gray may be appropriate in an artist, I guess.
You could say that the human scale, there is, all oneness too, and that there really is only contrast. I mean, it seems to me when you have a continuum, you also are just saying that there are differences, and that they have differences in lot of different ways, and sometimes those differences, perhaps the conflict comes because we try to make them sameness, or we try to do the blending when they are not wanting to be blended, or, you know, I don't know. It just seems like there, you could also say in the human scale that there is also...
Maybe one's inanimate and the other one isn't. Maybe that's my...
Well, we're talking about two things that are different, definitely. I mean, they're different in the art system and in the human system. They're not equally comparable. It's not as if you can say exactly the same, but I think
can you
we're...
you say black is better than white in the art system?
No. Not usually.
Well, and then okay, I don't...
Yeah. Well, and actually what I tend to do in intercultural work, too, is to not say that one culture is better than the other one, either.
Well, that's a conflict. I can understand that.
Right.
Or in music, I mean, a high note better than a low note.
Right.
They're on a continuum.
They're on a continuum, and I actually think what I would suggest is that the cultures are also on a continuum. The cultures that you've mentioned are on a continuum, as is the black and white and the high and the low. They're all on a continuum.
The continuum is not defined, I guess, well enough for me to understand what it is in the human aspect.
Hmm. Well, maybe we can work through that as we go along. Yeah. Any other ideas or thoughts that you want to have included? Certainly the idea of conflict and fear have come up and how we can work with that through creativity.
Some of those characteristics. Possibility?
Yeah.
Remote possibility. Well, that's part of what being creative is about, is making remote possibilities come true. So here we go. I want you to think also, the question that I asked then was about things that you've created and about the creative process. Did anyone, through talking about that or thinking about it, discover anything that you hadn't thought of before about your own creative process or what it means to be creative or to be in a creative process? Thoughts on the creative process? You can come up.
I would say to be helpful if one could be organized as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, you might have some ideas flashing around electrically, and if you can't grab hold of them and do something with it, you're not being very productive or creative.
Harnessing your creativity.
Yeah.
A quote from somebody that is not famous but is very creative that speaks to that is, she says, make it real. It's that you can have all these notions and ideas out there, but it's the person that actually says, yeah, I'm going to do it. And that's the commitment, that's the discipline, that's to make it real, to make it happen.
A thought that came to me when I spoke with the last partner I had, and maybe it's in here somewhere, perhaps in the willingness to take risks. He suggested that creativity came for him in one area when he was willing to let go.
Mm.
Let go of a lot of things, like let go of some stereotypes we may have about ourselves, that we can't do these things.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of a real revelation to me, the idea of letting go.
Mm-hmm. Surrender. Letting go, saying, yeah, it could be differently than what I've expected, instead of having a fixed notion. Either it's about yourself or something else, but you let down the barriers and it could go outside.
And maybe that's what we're saying in that word open there.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I said it.
Yeah.
Unconventional. Sometimes we need a little first time.
Yes. Unconventional. One of the things that I think help people to be unconventional is to then question our assumptions. Question what are our assumptions about whatever it is we're doing. So if we begin, we get real directed and focused in one direction, we tend to put up barriers and we tend to not see what's outside of it. We tend to not really look at what is underneath what we're doing. But if you begin to question what is underneath, what are some of the underlying assumptions about something, then that will help you become somewhat more unconventional. It'll help you question the conventions, the norms about your life, about whatever product is you're working on.
Oh, you may have the ability, say, to paint the Sistine Chapel and also to sculpt all the apostles, but you can't do both of them. you know, I mean, the time.
Yeah, there's a time limitation.
So there has to be some focus.
Right.
On what you want to do. I don't know where it is there.
Yeah, discipline, I think focus is probably good.
Well, it's a judgment somewhere of
making a decision.
What's important to you or what you want to do most or.
Mm-hmm.
Discipline.
Discipline.
Okay.
Choosing a discipline. Focus.
Well, to me, discipline means once you decide what you're going to do, is, you know, work. Don't work from
two to four,
but work from sunup to sundown.
You take that one.
Yeah, I'll take
that. Is focus work?
Sure.
Okay. Anything else about the creative process? I think that was excellent, whoever you were talking to, but remark.
About letting go.
About letting go.
I think of the baby eagle, that the mother knows that this little creature can fly, and she finally has to give it a shove.
Mm-hmm.
And then he flies.
Because
He doesn't know it. Well, she does.
Mm-hmm. Something else that came to me, and maybe this isn't the right time for it, but do we have to feel that inspiration is a part of creativity?
Well,
we think of inspiration in terms of the great art and the great music and all those artistic things. When we think of being creative and maybe not necessarily those artistic ways, but other ways that we've been talking about, is inspiration also a part of that?
It is for me, and the way I describe it, though, is when I look back at what does the word inspiration really mean? To inspire means to blow the breath into something. Inspire, to blow the spirit, to infuse the spirit into something. So for me, again, then you're coming back to creativity and spirituality. If the spirit is in the work that you are doing, then it is inspired. So that might not be the same definition of inspiration that you're normally thinking of, but if you are living in the spirit and you're working creatively, then you are inspired. So it might not have the same aha inspiration, like something came out of the blue that you'd never thought of before, but it's the spirit coming through you, which is inspiration to me. So it may not have the same, like something just suddenly hit you that you've never thought of before. That's how we often think of inspiration, whereas I think of inspiration as something that is the way we live. We can live all the time. It's with the spirit in us. And that's truly what the word, when you look in the dictionary, it means to have the breath or the spirit blown into you.
It's really an elevating thought for everyday life, isn't it? It's mm-hmm. a wonderfully elevating thought.
Necessity is another convention. Am I saying that right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes when we have to do something, we can create something.
Right.
Even if you never market it, like when I had a 7-month-old foster child who couldn't, he was in a body cast and couldn't sit in my chair. Mm. I didn't remember just how I did it, but I created something out of the grandma's block. So that I could prop him up and he could feed himself.
Right.
But
and you never would have thought of that, or there wouldn't have been a reason to think of it, but you used your creative abilities to do that.
He had to have a way
right.
so he could try to feed himself.
I'm going to write up here what I told you all yesterday about the creative process, and this is my compiled notion from reading a lot of people's work on creativity and the process of creativity. It may not work exactly for you. It's not to say this is the only way that the process works, but there's a time of preparation, and then there's a time, what I call mystery. Others call incubation is another word. It's the letting go time. It's the surrender time. It's saying, all those notions about how I thought I could do this or should do this, I have to drop and let go of, because I gotta let the new come forward. The third state is inspiration. That's, you get this sort of aha, you get some notion of another way to do it. I'm gonna talk about this with some specific examples in a minute. Then there's the creation. You actually make it, this thing that you use for your. It's also often talked about as the implementation phase.
Those of you who've worked as you're an engineer, you probably recognize this cycle just in terms of creating things, building anything. And then, you know, you're going to assess it. There's an assessment phase. Does this work? And if it works, but I want to modify it a little bit and I'm going to keep creating it, I'll do it, I'll change it a little bit. I'll modify one thing or another. The thing I mentioned about the compost box, I don't know if you've noticed up there, but there's a big box up in the dining hall for the compost to go in. I don't know how many of you have walked by it. But about a week and a half ago, the kitchen has just been remodeled here at Holden. And I've been working as a carpenter. The Sven, who is the person in charge of operations, said to me, we need something to cover up the compost bins. We need, you know, it's a creation. And I did go through the creative process to manifest it. It's not done yet. It's a work in progress.
So hard to say.
Yes. It is a work in progress. Someone put artwork in progress, but that's questionable.
Excuse me, can I ask you a question? Are you referring to where we literally disposed of this?
Yeah, that big box. Yeah, that big.
You just got a barrel going with this clever cover with holes in it. Is that the thing you mean?
Yeah, inside the kitchen,
inside
next to the place where you put the dishes away, there's a big box that looks like a three-hole toilet.
Oh, that's it. I didn't know if you were referring to that or something else.
No, that's it.
The greater mass.
That's it. You've got it. It's been referred to as many things already. And I haven't put the lids on them, and they said there were some spare toilet seats down under the plumbing shop, which we may have to do. I don't know what Sven would think about that, though. So. But we're waiting for it's going to be laminated on the top, you know, but we don't have the contact cement, which we ordered about 10 days ago. I haven't really gotten keyed in here to this. You got to send down to Chelan to get things. But anyway, I feel like that, like I said, that's not a piece of artwork, but I did go through a creative process. I had a period of preparation. We'll talk a little bit more about preparation, but I did have to let go of my notion of what that thing needed to look like in order to redesign it. I think as an engineer, you do this sort of thing all the time. And then it came to me, well, again, it was not a major revelation that it woke me up in the middle of the night. I mean, if it had, I would have said, gosh, I'm sorry. I think I need to go back to sleep. But it was, in that sense, I was inspired because I thought, oh, yeah, this will work. This will work. And as I built it, some things changed. That's also part of the mystery. You don't just say, I'm going to do it, and you do exactly what your idea is, and then you're done. We did create it. We worked on it. I would do some things differently if I were to design that again. So in assessing it, I would create it somewhat differently. I partly use that example because it's like creating a meal or creating something that we don't normally think of as artwork. We are all creators in that sense. We do take ourselves through this creative process. I'm wondering if anybody has an example of their own that they'd like to share with us.
I can use an example. For instance, I like to cook, and I call myself a experimental cook.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'll read a recipe and I'll say, oh, that sounds good, I think I'll do it. But it never comes out the way it says. I mean, I never do it the way it says in the book. Because I think, oh, well, we would like it better so-and-so way.
Mm-hmm.
Or we don't like this much in it. So I twist and juke it around it. You'd have no idea that you'd seen the original, that it was the same thing, but
right.
Written down where I was, or where I got the idea or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, I guess that's a sort of...
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, I went through that entire process now that I think of it. I wanted a bird bath without buying one, you know, at this time. So I had heard or seen the idea of using a cage for a tomato plant to grow. And you buy vinyl flower pot bottoms to fit into the rings.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't work the way I had first thought it would, because the 12-inch ring
dropped out of the 12-inch space. Because it must have been 12.5 inches, right. Say that's the reason. So first I wound that ring with thick plastic, like say a garbage bag, but it was nice red. Mm. And I wrapped it in order to thicken the ring, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that the thing would sit in it. It still fell through. So then I remember we had some rope, in the garage. So I twined it real nicely with rope, which is hard to do because every time you twine here, you tangle there. Mm-hmm.
You're a vibrator, so you
should. Yeah. Well, yeah. But anyway, I thickened or lessened its circumference by winding it with rope. Therefore, the 12-inch platter did fit into it. Mm-hmm. And then the next one down took, I think, an 8-inch and then a 6-inch, and you mm-hmm. stick the whole thing in the ground, mm-hmm. and it works nicely. Yeah. I just have to keep it filled with water.
Mm-hmm. So now you have a 3-tiered birthday.
Right.
Which,
and the people say, don't you know that's a tomato cage?
Well, but see, that's exactly what you did. You took somebody else, that was their notion of what it was. Yeah. It was a tomato cage, and you have altered it. You dropped that, and you made something else out of it. Yeah. And in some ways, that includes a lot of the components we were talking, and certainly necessity. It's like, well, you didn't want to go out and buy a bird. So keep thinking about this. We're going to talk a little bit more about, we'll continue to talk about the creative process. I want to do something on preparation.
I just had a question. You said that your project up there,
right,
as soon as you finished it, or soon after assessment, you decided that you would have done it different.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is not that whole process up there preparation for the next time?
Yeah.
So,
could
I
be.
Mean, okay, it's
a learning process.
Yeah, so
if I wanted to do it again.
You've segmented these things. Mm-hmm. And can you, but do you say this whole pattern was preparation?
Right. So it's all preparation. And actually, I do this so that we can understand it as a cycle.
Okay.
But there's inspiration involved in this part. There's creation involved in this part. I mean, these are integrated, And you continue. It's more like a spiral. If I were to draw it as a spiral like this, if I were interested in continuing to build compost pits, then I will bring
leave something half done?
Well, I meant to bring a pot that I'm working on that's downstairs. That it's a finished pot, and with pottery, you're finished, you're done. But I want to work on the idea again. It's got tracks on it. It's got coyote tracks on it. And I worked on a design on it, but I'd like to do it again. And I'll probably do it again and again and again till I get more of what I really want. So I have an idea in my head. The first time I did it, it didn't come out exactly like I wanted. So I'm going to do it again. And that first time is preparation for the next time and going through the cycle.
Under mystery, would you include the concept of contemplation?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where actually I would conclude that partly under the first one, under preparation too. I want us to read through, you all are familiar with Thomas Merton, I'm sure. Thomas Merton has translated translated stories from Chinese philosopher named Chuang Tzu. And here's the book. It's actually in the library, but it's not because I'm holding it right here. But it is in the Holden Library. And the story I want us to look at, and I'm going to read it out loud and you all can follow along. But I guess I'm supposed to stay close to this. I think this story really speaks very well to preparation as an artist. It's as we read through it, think about it, and then afterwards we'll talk about it a little bit. If I can find it here. The wood carver. Hing, the master carver, made a bell stand of precious wood. When it was finished, all who saw it were astounded. They said it must be the work of spirits. The Prince of Lu said to the master carver, "What is your secret?" Hing replied, "I am only a workman. I have no secret. There is only this. When I began to think about the work you commanded, I guarded my spirit, did not extend it on trifles that were not to the point.
I fasted in order to set my heart at rest. After 3 days fasting, I had forgotten gain and success. After 5 days, I had forgotten praise or criticism. After 7 days, I had forgotten my body with all its limbs. By the time all thought of your highness and of the court had faded away, all that might distract me from the work had vanished. I was collected in the single thought of the bell stand. Then I went to the forest to see the trees in their own natural state. When the right tree appeared before my eyes, the bell stand also appeared in it, clearly, beyond doubt. All I had to do was to put forth my hand and begin. If I had not met this particular tree, there would have been no bell stand at all. What happened? My own collected thought encountered the hidden potential in the wood. From this live encounter came the work which you ascribe to the spirits. So in the second stanza, there's a fair amount in there, I think, about preparation, and it's a bit...
It's also mysterious.
Mysterious, yeah. Yeah. Any comments or responses to it?
Talk about focus.
Yes, talk about focus. And choice, I think focus in the sense of discipline and also focus in the choice of the art that he's going to do. He's clearly a woodcarver.
Unconventional.
There's unconventional.
A lot in this that I heard from the people that I spoke to, too.
Can you say more about that?
Well, one thing that sticks in my mind is that Grace said when she had something to think of, or she would say, sleep on it.
Which is also part of the incubation and the mystery time. It's you let go.
Fermentation.
Germination. Yeah. Germination, fermentation.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I see inspiration here.
Mm-hmm.
When the right tree appeared before my eyes, the bell stand also appeared.
Right. Yeah.
But the preparation is also inspiring. I think that, you know, that's part of what you were saying about the living out the spirit. The spirit led the carver into the time of preparation, into the time of reflection, so that there would be eyes to see or spirit to see what was going to appear.
It's funny how necessity gets in there too when he says it's been commanded.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. And we often think of art as being something that's not necessary, or something that is frivolous, or something that's out of the use of common need, when in fact, most people who consider themselves artists, as well as most of us who work in the world artistically and creatively, respond to necessity. We respond to what is being asked of us. It may be asked of us in unconventional ways. It may not be your boss, but it may be a call from an image that just won't leave you alone, that you've got to create. That you've got to bring forth. I want to look at the second stanza and see if we can pick out some of the things that he puts in there that are important to, in a way, let go of, like you all were saying.
As I guarded my spirit but did not expend it on trifles, that's focus.
Mm-hmm.
That's discipline, too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that's what happened to you, though.
You know?
Said at the beginning, when they asked you to fix this thing, you had a concept of what you were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
But then he said take 3 days, and then this was your idea to reorient yourself and see what really was needed, and not, you know, to lose your initial concept.
Right. To lose the fact that it was a tomato stand, and that's the only thing it could be. You know, to lose the conventional notion of how to make this box. I didn't fast, I have to say, but...
Well, no, I would think in that case you'd be putting a whole lot more garbage in.
Right.
Yeah, it worked.
Other things in that in that stanza, though, that I think they're...
There was independence there, too, because he distanced himself from the order. And he got away from, by this time, I'd lost all thought of your highness.
Right.
And the party faded away.
Right.
really it discovers to independence.
I think also the forgot praise and criticism gain and success, we were talking, Dean and I were talking about the importance of not being anxious about succeeding or judgment or in that sense of just sort of removing yourself from those kind of dynamics so that the spirit can move.
Yeah.
I think setting his heart at rest is kind of the crux of this.
The preparation.
All the outside stuff, like the bugs and letting go.
Yeah. So getting rid of all that distracts you. In response to both of those, when I work in corporations around creativity, and particularly in manufacturing and engineering things, one of the biggest things to let go of is the idea of gain and success, or praise and criticism, because you're trying to get this done, you're trying to get it done right, there's some notion of how it should be right, and you want to do it well for your boss, and you know, this, all of these ideas that it has to happen, we want to get praise for it, we don't want to get criticized, we want to get a good evaluation, and that all is very stifling in a many, many ways to the creative process.
This is art for art's sake.
Well, it is partially, but I think your point again is it was commanded, it was necessary. So it's how do you hold that paradox where you let go of the success, the praise, the criticism, and the gain. The need to please, but still produce something that's being asked of you that's necessary in the world. It's a paradoxical notion.
Well, I have to throw in here that we've just come back from Italy. The Sistine Chapel was commanded.
Yes.
And he fought all the way because he was a sculptor.
Right. He didn't want to present it in that form. Is that right?
But he had a need. Mm-hmm. He had to produce something on order.
Can you imagine designing something, though, and have to put it before a design review board of the hundreds of engineers?
Yeah, it's very stifling. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, it seems to me there's more into this with Prince Lou. He was the design engineer board, in a sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, there must have been some prior relationship with this. He calls himself a workman, but he's an artist. But
he calls himself a workman for a reason. But yeah.
Okay. Oh, yes, he did. But I mean, if Prince Lou gives him 7 days to do nothing, another few days to go out and tramp the forest doing nothing. I mean, no sign of anything. Mm-hmm. And so I mean, but when he sees it, when it's finished, then if he'd taken an extra 2 weeks, that'd been fine. Mm-hmm. You know, because it would seem to me that, and I'm sure Lou was the type of guy, he could chop his head off and not think about it. And so,
well, they do have a certain kind of relationship.
Yeah, but the point is, based on he surely had some prior knowledge of the artistry of this of the king.
Right.
And so he was willing to sit back and give him whatever time he took to do it.
Mm-hmm. And I think at the beginning,
a judgment. Well, I mean, you know, he knew he had to know this man's ability, and you know, if he's got the ability, you don't, you know, you let him go do his thing because that's the best way to turn it loose.
Well, and that's part, I think, thank you both for bringing what you're saying, is that relationship of trust often doesn't exist, where people don't extend and say, yeah, I know, Larry, you can do this, and I'm going to let you do it and believe that you can do it. And the other relationship is with yourself, is believe that you can do it, you know, and having that trust in yourself. So I think that if you look at the prince and the carver as two people, or the prince and the carver as one person, believing in yourself that I'm going to take the time that's necessary, I'm going to go and fast for 7 days, and I need to do that in order to prepare myself to do this job well. The trust in yourself, in this case it was a person outside, the prince, who trusted him. It's an important relationship.
What's the difference between being commanded to do something and doing it on your own free will?
Probably having resources to do it.
Pressure. Command is your mouth to do it.
$500.
And he goes through a process of letting go of that command. He said by the time he'd done all of this, he wasn't thinking about the highness, his highness at all. But that did set up the initial context, is that I command you to do this. So he was being directed.
Sometimes, though, that can be an internal process where you really feel like you have no choice. There's something in your birthing that has to have expression, has to take shape and form.
I think in order for him to do this, that had to happen, and that was part of the process. So in this case, he was commanded, but then I think he internalized the command and went and did it. It had to come from within himself in order for him to do it fully and authentically.
I think, that process happens whether you have a job to do. Mm-hmm. There are certain things that you have to do. And probably it's a matter of finding your own way to do that. Mm-hmm. Because, there might be a model that you admire who is doing a fantastic job. And you may admire the way that person is doing the job and admire the person greatly. But if you try to imitate that person while you are doing that same job, you're lost.
Right.
You have to find your way and be very honest. You can't honestly do a job another person's way. You have to find your own way to do that. You need yourself.
Which is an excellent remark, I think, and somewhat in closing about preparation. I think it is about finding your own way into the creative process. And I'm certainly, by giving you this, not suggesting that it needs to be, 3 days of fasting and then another 5 days. But that's a metaphor for other things that you may need to do for yourself or have learned to do. And I'm not suggesting, this may be more of a reflective process. What have you done in your life to prepare yourself to be creative, or what can you do in your life?
It's interesting how he goes through this process and describes the process, but then he gives credit to the tree. If there hadn't been this particular tree, there'd be no bell there.
Right.
Well, that gets into some of the things that we talked about, the opportunity.
But don't you think that's his vision? Yeah. He went out there to find the tree, and he saw the particular tree. Then he saw the bell stand there.
He couldn't have made the tree.
Maybe I could have. Maybe he just said that.
That was perfect! It's that he couldn't, imagine him walking out and just seeing the first tree and say, this is it, and not chopping it down and forcing his image on it. Yeah. But instead, what he's saying, it's a relationship between my vision and the material that I work with. And I think when I work with clay, I can see that. It's my vision, but this clay has a vision too, and we better work on this together. I think that's true when you work with people. I think it's true in anything that we do, that we may have our notion of and our vision of what we're working on, but there are so many other factors out there that we need to work with, and that it's the relationship. And that's where the mystery does come in. We can't control it. There's a lot of mysterious things that come up.
Yeah,